Sure. Hi, this is Greg Mackey, elected member, City of Adelaide, Chief Executive, History Trust of South Australia.
So welcome, Greg.
Thank you, Sue.
And thank you for agreeing to come on to Adelaide Chronicles, which is a podcasting platform that is all about the stories of people who've shaped Adelaide in some way or another.
Thank you, and it's lovely to be thought of as having had a little bit of shaping up in the journey.
Oh, you certainly have. And I'd like to acknowledge also this interview is taking place on the land of the Kaurna people and pay our respects to the elders past, present and emerging, and sovereignty never ceded. So, Greg, if I were to ask you a question, what does an inclusive, sustainable future look like to you? How would you respond to that?
Kinder, more civil, more connected, and I don't mean connectivity, I mean human connection. I think the experience of the last few months with people working from home has certainly adjusted many people's vista on what local is and what the neighbourhood can be. And speaking for myself, having worked largely from home for the last almost 3 months and had more time for those doorstop conversations on the footpath conversations.
Yeah.
It's been a beautiful thing to actually get to know neighbours. We've been 26 years in our house at Norwood, and we have we know enough our neighbours enough to say hello to, but seldom take time for a conversation. And this period has afforded us mm-hmm. all a little more breathing space in which to converse. And so for me, a more inclusive society has to be aim to be a more civil and civically connected society where local local connection counts for something.
Mm. And nothing can be truly sustainable unless it's inclusive.
By the term inclusive, I would like also to think that we move beyond the notions of tolerance to the notions of acceptance of difference.
Mm, exactly. Particularly so many minority groups that probably don't appreciate being tolerated.
Well, you know, if I were to look at myself, and I know I'm a privileged white middle-aged guy who's been very, very fortunate. I've worked hard, but there has been rewards. Nevertheless, I am also a gay man and have in the course of my life been witness to acts of intolerance toward other gay people. I'm a colourblind man and therefore it's a tiny disability or differing ability, but I see the world in different colours than the majority of people. And at times that proves to be a little bit more of a challenge. Nothing earth-shattering, of course. And I live with type 2 diabetes, and therefore I manage a chronic disease. And through diet and mild medication, I am probably nevertheless fitter than I was 20 years ago.
One of the viruses that remains in people's memory was the HIV virus, and that was a shameful period
in our society. It absolutely was, Sue. The age that I was, I came out in the late 70s, and it was really not until probably the mid to late 80s that HIV/AIDS became far more widely discussed and reported upon. And it's certainly a very tragic time for many people that I knew who didn't survive the early onset of HIV infection. But I would hate to have been just that 10 years younger and be coming out in that period, because all of the signals were overwhelmingly negative, or you had to become an activist in order to justify your place in the scheme of things. Relatively speaking, I was fortunate, I'm HIV negative, and looked after myself. But at the end of the day, it became an excuse to stigmatise people who were different. Now, if we were in Africa, the majority of people living with HIV and who died of HIV were women and children. Mm. It's simply an accident of transmission. In the late 80s, 1988, as co-owner of Imprints Booksellers, we had a little gallery upstairs in our first location, 80 Hindley Street, called Art Zone Gallery. And I organised the first ever Art for AIDS exhibition. It was a fundraising benefit for the Bobby Goldsmith Foundation, which was a support charity for people living with HIV AIDS. And I had my first real baptism of fire in terms of crossing the media at that time. And I became a victim of Darren Hinch's Today Tonight program. They decided that to be using art to highlight survival and the rights of gay people to continue to love the people they love, that was a heresy in their eyes. And so I came off very much the loser in that argument. I did manage to raise, I think, something like $40,000 in 1988 dollars for it, and thanks to the generosity of so many artists who created work and contributed it. And it was not only gay artists, it wasn't only lesbian artists, yeah. It was just people, artists who wanted support, to be inclusive, to be respectful, to celebrate the fact that this is an accident, it was an infection. Likewise today, completely different virus, but the coronavirus, COVID-19, has forced the whole of society, the whole of the world, to activate in ways that 6 months ago none of us would have thought that this was where we were going.
I think that we're at a critical point. I think this is a unique moment in time where we have the capacity to bring together a whole range of like-minded people and perhaps change things.
And some of that change will be hopefully for the better, certainly thinking about the approach between the workplace and home and the reality for many, many employers. I'm a leader in the public sector, South Australian public sector, and while we had policies in place that provided a framework for people to work from home, it was never encouraged, and it was the exception rather than the rule. Well, that has now been flipped on its head, and I won't be surprised if many employers now that the evidence exists that productivity continues, that more employers, I will be very surprised if more employers don't embrace a more accommodating approach to workplace location and, for that matter, work-life balance. I certainly hope so. On the negative side, perfectly possible to imagine that the handshake and the hug and the kiss are something of a threatened species at the moment, and I miss that.
I seriously miss it.
I'm a hugger. I'm a total hugger. You know, the handshake is the prelude to a hug.
Yes.
Those are preludes to a peck on the cheek as well. You know, it's just the way we're acculturated.
You feel like something's missing when you see someone that you haven't seen for a while.
Elbows, they're not quite the same.
They're not quite the same. No. Also, there's capacity, I think, for some... for local government, local democracy, local people having more of a engagement in local things and more involved in the local governance. You're spot on there now, aren't you?
Well, I'm certainly in a spot where I can be a voice for change, for engagement. We have probably in the last generation seen the decline of joining. You know, once upon a time, everybody were members of some club or some association. For many adults, it's through their children and playing an enabling role to connect their children through sport and other recreational activities that association would form. And, of course, school councils and school committees, etc. You know, one of the bedrocks of community life, and even those communities who import their students from far, you know, distant places, there is a real sense of identity around the school community. It's not the school enterprise, it's not the school corporation, it's the entity. Through my roles in arts and culture over the last 25 years, I've certainly seen we're facing, unchecked, we're facing a crisis and a collapse of succession for many, many community missions. It almost seems as though for charities to survive, they have to get bigger, they have to achieve a level of scale, and of course adopt corporate behaviour, sustainable business practices, which that's not a sin. It is absolutely understandable. The most important thing, though, is that the people who support and are employed by charitable organisations and community benefit organisations, I prefer to use the term community benefit than not-for-profit. Community benefit organisations should never lose sight of the purpose for which they're congregating, for which they're communing to achieve a shared goal. The end is... financial sustainability is a means, it is not an end. And of course, you can't survive for long operating, you know, constant deficits that aren't backed up with capital. I absolutely understand that. I've been a micro business operator for the majority of my adult working life, and then I've facilitated through my public sector leadership roles the sustaining of community voice and community organisations and cultural organisations through my role as a funder, an enabler. And we face at the moment, pre-COVID, one of the biggest existential crises, and that is of succession. The lack of a new wave of people willing or indeed actually able to step up because the competing priorities of work have rendered many people actually incapable. Even if they had the will, there are only so many hours in a day, and I don't have children, and therefore I have nothing but respect and appreciation for the amount of time that people invest in sustaining and supporting and nurturing their families. I always wanted to be a school teacher. That was my life's vision until my first term of prac teaching and at university. And it always felt to me to be a noble profession. What I have since learned is that perhaps back in the beginning of the 70s, a backbencher in Parliament and a teacher enjoyed roughly salary parity. And we no longer have that parity maintained because the people who we elect to represent us remunerated at a vastly, vastly greater level than the people who elect them. And that's a complex policy and social issue and challenge when it comes to the legitimacy of representation. Just going back to the, you know, your proposition about COVID and community, what I'm hoping is that out of this last 3 months, and who knows, the regulations and the guidelines are being relaxed in a staged and progressive way, but I think we're still a long, long way from a complete relaxing of those guidelines, and there are going to be tension points along the way. Again, another subject. But what I'm hoping that we're going to see is a reprioritising for some people to make more time for their community. Service is its own reward. I absolutely, really deeply and fundamentally believe in the dignity of service. It's what has driven and motivated me along the way. And yes, in my service roles, some of them have been remunerated and occasionally very well remunerated. And I have my own journey of grappling with the equity of that. That said, I've always practiced a generosity when it comes to time, and I've always been willing to give time and hopefully the smarts that come with the body of experience that I've gleaned over my 60 years on this planet to the benefit of a greater number of people.
That is quite rare.
It certainly could be more common than it is, yeah. And that's perhaps just me being a little bit diplomatic. It is rare. Mm. You're quite right.
Yeah.
It is rare.
But there is a movement happening at the moment, isn't there? There's a groundswell of people who want things to change. And I did an interview with a psychiatrist about anxiety, and as part of this whole process of interviewing people during the COVID-19. And he said in the year 2000, they predicted that by 2020, anxiety would be at a peak. They didn't know anything. Bushfires, droughts and COVID-19. So
locusts.
Locusts, yeah. Everything, yeah. Everything. We've had every plague you can imagine, really, hit this country. So he said COVID-19 came at a time when Australians were highly anxious and horrified by the bushfires, absolutely horrified, and by governments refusing almost to talk about climate change. That really resonated with me, because whilst there's a lot of connection and a lot of warmth and a lot of lovely things happening, there's a lot of anxiety, isn't there?
Yes, there is.
About the future. And that's a subject I would actually love to talk to you again about in a few months,
I'd be happy to. So,
because I think we've got to start telling this story of now, collecting the stories from people, from a whole range of people, of right now, and then looking back in 3 months' time and saying, oh, have we moved on?
And looking back then in 12 months' time.
In 12 months' time. I think that's really important.
Because the benefit of hindsight is a very powerful teacher.
It is.